Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and every major podcast provider. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player on our website, which is www.theorganicview.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or simply call into the show at area code 917-932-1068. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. Today, I'll be speaking to Dr. Paul Connett, who's one of the authors for the book The Case Against Fluoride, How Hazardous Waste Ended Up in Our Drinking Water, and the Bad Science and Powerful Politics That Keep It There. Most people take for granted that the water from their faucets is safe to drink, or is it? There's a lot of controversy over just how safe our tap water is, and also if our government agencies have the right to treat drinking water that is consumed by the masses. The agencies that are charged with protecting our water claim that everything is safe. However, there are many scientists who disagree. In the case against fluoride, this book really takes a new look at the science behind water fluoridation and argues that just because the medical establishment endorses a public health measure, that doesn't mean that it's safe. In the case of water fluoridation, the chemicals used to fluoridate the water that more than 180 million people drink each day are not pharmaceutical grade, but rather hazardous waste products of the phosphate fertilizer industry. It's illegal to dump them into rivers and lakes or release them into the atmosphere. And when water fluoridation is a prime example of one of the worst medical practices possible, forced medication with no control over the dose or who gets it. I mean, perhaps most shocking of all is it's not subject to any federal regulation. Dr. Paul Connett is the director of the Fluoride Action Network and the executive director of the parent body, the American Environmental Health Studies Project. He's spoken and given more than 2,000 presentations in 49 states and 52 countries on the issue of waste management. And he holds a bachelor's degree from the University of Cambridge, a PhD in chemistry from Dartmouth College, and is a retired professor of environmental chemistry and toxicology at St. Lawrence University. So I would like to welcome to the show Dr. Paul Connett. Good afternoon, Dr. Connett, and welcome to The Organic View.
Good afternoon, June. Thanks for having me on your program.
It's a pleasure to have you. And now this week, actually August 7th through the 13th, is Fluoride Awareness Week, which I'd like you to explain everything that you're doing to promote awareness for this cause.
Well, we're working with Dr. Joe McCullough out of Chicago, who is each day putting out a magnificent bulletin summarizing the science on several issues. We've had two on bone so far, one on the pineal gland, and today's issue was on the brain, the fluoride's impact on the brain, particularly lowering of IQ. And many thousands of people have already looked at those bulletins, made comments, and so on. So people can find those by going to mercola.com, mercola.com.
Thank you. And Dr. Connett, can you talk about yourself a little bit and what got you involved with this whole big disaster that's going on with our water system?
Well, that's a very good question, because I didn't want this issue. I really didn't. As you pointed out in your introductory comments, after joining St. Lawrence University, within a year and a half, I was very fully engaged in a battle fighting incineration. It began with a local incinerator battle. But the demands of my time grew and grew and grew, and eventually the issue has taken me to 49 states in the United States and at least 52 other countries. And it was taking up most of my weekends, most of my holidays, most of my term breaks, and so on. And so when several people asked me to get involved with fluoridation, and I distinctly remember three people, one from Ontario, one from Spokane, Washington, another one from East Liverpool, Ohio, asked me, would I also get involved with fluoridation? And I said, sorry, I can't. I'm just too busy teaching chemistry and too busy working on the waste issue. I've got no more time. And the other thing which I didn't say to them is I didn't want to be stigmatized as Looney Tunes by the scientific community, because that's what they've done. They've done that successfully for 60 years. They've branded opponents of fluoridation as a bunch of right-wing nuts portrayed in the movie Dr. Strangelove. And so I didn't want to be stigmatized, and I didn't want this issue, because I felt if I got involved with that, then it would impair my credibility on my other activities. However, along came one person I couldn't say no to, and that was my wife. And in 1996, that's 15 years ago, July the 6th to be precise, she put a bunch of papers on my desk and she gave me a cup of tea. I should have been suspicious. She doesn't normally treat me that way in the middle of the afternoon, but I got my cup of tea. And she says, would you read these papers? And I said, what is it? And she said, fluoridation. I said, take that away. These people are crazy. But she's very persuasive. And she said to me, look, you must read these, because there's a meeting of the village council this afternoon. They are considering whether to continue fluoridation or not, and I need your advice. I want to go. I want to be able to participate, and I want to be able to tell them whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. And she was very angry, because she didn't know up until a few weeks before that we actually were drinking fluoridated water. Anyway, she finally persuaded me to do, and I was shocked and I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed because I'd gone along with this prevailing attitude that the people opposed to fluoridation are crazy. They're not crazy. I thought they confused, and it's easy to do, confuse the fluorine, the element, the parent element, with compounds, combinations with other elements that fluorine creates. And that confusion is pretty fundamental, because fluorine is the most reactive element of the periodic table. Fluoride, on the other hand, a compound containing fluorine, is fairly benign. It's from a chemical point of view, it's unreactive. And I thought they'd made that confusion. But when I started to read the literature, it was clear they hadn't made that confusion. And in fact, it turns out that fluoride, whilst it is fairly inactive from a chemical point of view, from a biological point of view, it's very active indeed. And the first opponents of fluoridation were biochemists who had used fluoride to poison enzymes in their experiments. So the biochemists know that you don't want the fluoride ion anywhere near your body any more than we get a small amount naturally in some foods and so on. You don't want any more. That was the first thing. The second thing was to find out that the level in mother's milk, you know, baby's first meal, designed by nature, evolution, Mother Nature, the God, however you think the baby emerged, the human baby emerged on this planet, that mother's milk is designed to deliver to the baby everything it needs for development. And the only problem that can happen is if the mother's diet is short of essential minerals or vitamins or things that the baby can't make, then obviously that milk has to be supplemented. But it's a tremendous clue that we've made a mistake here with fluoridation, because the level in mother's milk is incredibly low. I'll give you a number. It's 0.004 parts per million. And to put that into perspective, we fluoridate approximately at one part per million. So a bottle-fed baby in a fluoridated community is getting up to 250 times more fluoride than nature intended, certainly 250 times more fluoride than a breastfed baby. And that, in my mind, is a stupid thing to do. It's a reckless thing to do. And to think that a bunch of dentists in 1940 knew more about what the baby needed than nature itself, to me, is preposterous. And this preposterousness has become gone from, if you like, an unfortunate mistake to an exercise in the arrogance of power. Because now, today, now that the science is out there that shows that swallowing fluoride does little to reduce tooth decay, so the whole thing is meaningless, because fluoride works, if it works at all, it works topically on the outside of the tooth. And the science says there are a number of risks that we shouldn't be taking. Even if you just use the precautionary principle, we should not be doing this, because fluoride accumulates in the bones, fluoride accumulates in the pineal gland, fluoride lowers thyroid function, and we now have 24 studies which shows that fluoride lowers IQ or is associated with a lowering of IQ at fairly modest levels. Again, the science is coming in that says this has always been a mistake, it's a bad medical practice, but today it doesn't work and it's causing harm, but the people in charge are just too arrogant, too proud of this practice to admit it.
Well, do you think that it's also, I mean, look at cigarette smoking 40 years ago, wasn't it, where they would tell pregnant women, smoke a cigarette, it'll help you relax. And now look at the science today. I mean, if anything that the audience that tunes into the Organic View has learned, especially from the scientists, the experts such as yourself, who understand the research, who have done the research, who see how everything started out and how it just took a wrong turn. It's just interesting. It's like even with women's menstrual cramps, they would remove the ovaries as a result. And, I mean, it's just barbaric. But with the whole situation with fluoride, it's interesting. When I speak to colleagues and friends that are located outside the United States, they bring it up all the time. They say, you know, it's just ridiculous that the government agencies in the states mass medicate. And
absolutely.
I know personally, as a master gardener, I've noticed something when it comes to just my house plants. I have to leave my water sit out over on the counter for a few hours to let the fluoride dissipate so that I can use that water.
Can I just interrupt you a second? Can I interrupt you a second?
Sure.
The fluoride wouldn't dissipate that way. It's possibly the chlorine, the volatile compounds, may be coming off the surface. But that's one of the troubles. When you boil water, you don't get rid of the fluoride. The fluoride gets more concentrated in the water that's left over. The water distills over, the volatiles distill over. So it may be that it's other contaminants in the water.
I would think
chlorine would be the one.
Yeah, you could definitely smell it. It's the chlorine. Thank you for the correction.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's just
yeah.
the fact that, you know, just the water itself, I mean, so many people buy bottled water, and that's a whole other controversy. But
It is.
The
important thing to stress here, Jim, sorry to interrupt, the important thing to stress here is that chlorine and these other substances, we add a lot of chemicals to water, but all those other chemicals are added to the water to treat the water, to make it safe, make it palatable to drink. And that is the function of the water departments. Fluoride is the only chemical that we add to the water to treat people. In other words, we're using the public water supply to deliver a medical treatment, to deliver medicine. And that is a stupid thing to do for the following reasons. Number one, it deprives the individual of their right to informed consent to medication, which is a very important, precious right. Go to the website of the American Medical Association and look up informed consent. It's very clear about this. So what we're allowing in New York City and other communities that fluoridate, we're allowing the local government or the state government to do to everyone what a doctor can do to no one. A doctor cannot force you to take medicine. If a doctor put a glass of fluoridated water in front of you and said, drink this, and you said, I don't want to, he can't force you to do it. But that's what's happening, especially to families of low income who can't afford to avoid it. The second thing which makes this a stupid practice, once you put medicine into the drinking water, fluoride or something else, but we haven't done it with anything else, once you put fluoride in the drinking water, you can't control the dose. because you can't control how much water people drink, and you can't control how much fluoride they're getting from other sources, and we get it from many other sources, including dental products, of course, and pesticide residues. Ask any pharmacist if there's any drug in his store or her store that he can give to people without controlling the dose. He would laugh at you. Secondly, you can't control who gets this drug. Ask your pharmacist if there's any drug in his or her store that can go to everybody, regardless of their age, regardless of their body weight, regardless of their health status, regardless of their nutritional status, regardless of allergies. I mean, it is preposterous. And then to add to the preposterous notion of this as a medical practice, the way it is practiced in the United States and the other handful of fluoridated countries, is there's no health agency tracking side effects. Normally when the Food and Drug Administration permits a drug to be used, they follow it. They collect reports from doctors and citizens about side effects. No one's doing that for fluoride. In fact, the Food and Drug Administration has never regulated fluoride for ingestion. And therefore, there have never been any randomized clinical trials, either for effectiveness or for safety. The official classification of fluoride is that it is an unapproved drug. On the other hand, the FDA, this is now Monty Python, the FDA does regulate fluoridated toothpaste. And if you look at the back of a tube of toothpaste, it says, one, keep out of the reach of children under six. Two, only use a recommended amount. And if you should accidentally swallow more than the recommended amount, which is a pea-sized amount of fluoridated toothpaste, then get medical attention or contact a poison control center right away. It's incredible. Now, that pea-sized amount, you can do the calculations, is a quarter of a milligram of fluoride. That's what's equivalent to a quarter of a milligram of fluoride, and that is equivalent to one glass of water, fluoridated water. Now, could you imagine if the FDA came into your kitchen and was consistent, they would put a notice over your tap which says, keep out of the reach of children under six, and only use one glass of water, and if you should accidentally swallow more than one glass of water, contact a poison control center. I mean, that would be the end of fluoridation right there. But no one's joining the dots. No one is joining the dots. This whole issue is run by a bunch of ill-informed dentists who are quite happy to see millions and millions of dollars into their coffers doing research on fluoridation. And we have the American Dental Association, which raises $100 million a year, much of it from fluoride endorsements of fluoride, the seal of approval on fluoridated dental products, spending a huge amount of money lobbying Congress, lobbying Congress to get money to promote fluoridation to the CDC and elsewhere. I mean, the whole thing goes on and on and on.
Now, I have a bunch of comments that I'd like to bring up at this point, if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
A lot of comments on Facebook. Lynn Smith wrote in, I would think that would be something the people should vote on. And the question that was posed was, do you think a government agency has the right to decide if your water should contain fluoride? And Don Easterbrooks wrote, no, just as they tell us what light bulbs to use, which is an excellent point. I mean, today, to try to find they have these eco-friendly light bulbs. They're ridiculous. They don't last for 7 years. And actually, I will have somebody on the show at some point to discuss this. But I've been talking to many different people about these light bulbs, and it's just interesting. They're supposed to be environmentally friendly, but yet you practically need a hazmat team in order to clean up the area if you should break one of these light bulbs. which is
scary.
That's right,
the fluorescent bulbs, yeah.
Yeah.
Fluorescent bulbs contain mercury, that's right.
And secondly, they don't last for 7 years. You're lucky if you get 3 months out of them. And thirdly, the one thing that I also noticed, and actually I think Dr. Sandra Steingraber, who authored several books and is also a scientist, made a comment that these light bulbs, because they are cool to touch, you're using more energy to heat your home in the winter because you don't have that little bit of heat that's coming from all the light bulbs. And if you think about it, every little thing adds up, whether it's computer, TV, what have you, everything does add to the heat in the room. But aside from that, I just wanted to mention that. And we have a bunch more comments. I just want to mention
Can I just respond
sure.
to that first one? I can't resist saying this. The road to hell is paved with good inventions. That's a twist on the good intentions. I'm sure a lot of the people involved in promoting fluoridation way back in 1945 had very good intentions. It must have been very exciting to think that you could just sprinkle a bit of pixie dust into the water supply and reduce tooth decay. The problem is that this policy quickly became fossilized once the U.S. Public Health Service endorsed it, which in turn triggered off a whole series of endorsements from the ADA, AMA, APHA, and so on. But the point is, they've never really done a good job of holding of scientific accountability, either for the effectiveness or safety of it. It became fossilized. And that's a dangerous thing to do, because at about the same time as fluoridation began, look at the other things that government was touting. They were saying that it was okay to have asbestos lagging our pipes, PCBs in transformers. They were spraying kids with DDT at picnics. And all these things have gone by the wayside, except for fluoridation, because fluoridation has the protection of professional bodies and the mighty U.S. government, as opposed to dirty old industries. And another point that you made, which I think is really important, often some of these bad practices get endorsements from unlikely sources. Indeed, I think 23,000 dentists advised smoking Viceroy cigarettes. And similarly, the doctors were having advertisements supporting the smoking of cigarettes. And that today sounds absolutely preposterous. The point is that even very clever people and very powerful governments can make mistakes when it comes to medical treatments and so on. The important thing is that they admit those mistakes. And for many of them, they do, but not this one. Not this one. They have got themselves into a position now where protecting water fluoridation has become far more important than protecting the health of our children. More important to protect children's teeth, in their view, than to protect their brains or their bones or their endocrine system. It's preposterous.
Now, Dr. Connett, the question that I have for you, I don't know if you are prepared to answer this or not, but if you could just state your own opinion, who benefits from this? Because it doesn't matter how you slice it or dice it, whenever it comes to anything that is bad for the public, and yeah. Anybody who's been listening to the show and following all the work that I've been doing to raise awareness with the current registration practices with the EPA regarding some of these systemic pesticides knows that there's somebody who is benefiting. And
yep.
We know for a fact that with the systemic pesticides, obviously and very clearly, it's the chemical companies. So with fluoride, is it a particular manufacturer? Is it a particular industry? Who benefits from the continued application, or rather, who benefits from the continued distribution of this drug into our water supply?
Well, I'm glad you said who benefits from it, because that question is easier to answer than who is behind it, who is driving this. But I can give you the people that are benefiting from fluoridation right now. Number one obviously the phosphate fertilizer industry that's getting rid of a hazardous waste. They can't dump the chemical that we use to fluoridate into the sea by international law. They can't dump it locally because it's too concentrated. But if someone buys it from them, it becomes a product. Once it's a product, then we can then put it into the drinking water. So the phosphate fertilizer industry is benefiting.
Let me just interrupt you. So because this is insane. So they can't get rid of it, but if they sell it, it's legal for them to sell it, and it's obviously considered to be a product that,
yes,
I assume is also unregulated. So basically, anybody can make a poison and sell it as a product.
Well, the law itself, you can understand where it came from, because if industry is dealing with toxic chemicals all the time. Toxic chemicals go in and toxic byproducts come out. And therefore, there's a need to encourage industry to recycle their toxic byproducts. What becomes preposterous is when those products are recycled as if they were non-toxic. And so we get this preposterous notion of putting a very toxic, contaminated, hazardous waste into the drinking water and simply use the discredited notion that the answer to pollution is dilution to get away with it. But to continue with the entities that are benefiting from this, 1 year before the U.S. government endorsed fluoridation in 1950, and that was before any trials had been completed and before any serious medical research had been published, the sugar lobby, representing 130-odd sugar interests from cornflakes to candies to chocolate, you name it, said, we need to find a way to reduce tooth decay without reducing sugar consumption. And they then proceeded to put millions of dollars into the nutrition departments and professors of nutrition around the country, particularly at Harvard, where Professor Fred Speer earned thousands, if not millions, chairman of the nutrition department, extolling the virtues of sugar, that Coca-Cola was a nutritious drink along with cookies and candies, and that fluoridation was absolutely fantastic. He was paid a lot of money to do that and was very effective, incidentally. So that's one interest. And the end result of that, of course, is that many parents took their eyes off the prize. What they should have been doing was to limit the sugar consumption between meals and not drink too much sugared soft drinks and so on. But with this magic ingredient of fluoride, they didn't have to worry. So maybe the worst thing that's happened as a result of fluoridation is that we've got millions of parents who in the past have not worried enough about the potential of their children getting obesity. So not only are they, by consuming so much sugar, getting tooth decay, which cannot be controlled by fluoridation, but they're also getting obese. Another interest here is that millions upon millions of dollars of research money from the National Institute of Health and other agencies of the Public Health Service has gone into research on fluoridation. It is a gravy train, absolute gravy train, for anybody who wants to do research at dental school. As long as they find that fluoridation is safe and effective, the money will flow. The moment they find that it's not safe and effective, the money will dry up, or they'll get fired, as happened with Dr. Phyllis Mullinex at the Forsyth Dental Center when she accidentally discovered that fluoride causes brain development problems for rats, that the rats exposed to fluoride before they were born were hyperactive, the rats exposed after they were born were hypoactive, and when that paper was accepted for publication, she was fired. That was 1995, and she hasn't had a job in academia since. Okay, another interest. Again, I'm not saying that they are behind fluoridation. That's difficult to demonstrate, but they certainly benefit from fluoridation, and that's the pharmaceutical industry, because the pharmaceutical industry is selling an enormous amount of medication which may very well be treating the symptoms of people that are sensitive to fluoride, and those symptoms are aching joints and bones, are treated by arthritis as arthritis, and that's a huge big seller in the United States, painkillers. Then you've got stomach complaints from people that are sensitive, and these anti-acid pills that they give out is another big seller. Synthroid, the second most prescribed drug in America, I think in 2009, is for hypothyroidism.
Oh yeah, that's a very interesting drug. I know it's created a lot of problems for many people. It's not something that you can just take and then, you know, if you don't feel like take it. Once you take it, you have to be consistent, and your body can really get screwed up from that stuff.
That's right. And the thyroid gland is very complicated.
Yeah,
and
you can die. Exactly. Yeah, you can die if the fluctuation in your thyroid is, if it's too drastic. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I just know from my previous guests that have discussed the thyroid, how many people walk around not even knowing that they have issues with the thyroid. And the fact of the matter is that if these issues are caused by our drinking water, that is just, it's, as you said, it's, my goodness, this is just really something that needs to stop. And so, in essence, all the different things that you're saying, it makes complete sense. It actually conforms to what they do in other industries. I mean, if you find a scientist that proves something to be a major concern that could kill or cause serious harm to people, what happens? The smear campaign begins. The scientist gets fired. They are no longer employable. They wind up basically tossing away an entire career. Emotionally, they cripple them, because if you can't get work, you can't support yourself. What are you supposed to do? And this is happening all over the world with any scientist that dares to speak out against any chemical company. And it's ridiculous. Why do the corporations dictate what happens in our lives, in our world?
Absolutely.
Why are the corporations dictating to our government? Our government, which is a government that is supposed to be a government that's of the people, by the people, and for the people.
Yep.
My family, families have fought for our ability to sit here and have this discussion.
I know, it's scary. It's scary. I was told, I haven't checked this number, but I'm told that there are more lobbyists for the pharmaceutical industry in Washington, D.C. than there are members of Congress. They've got literally millions of dollars to throw around, doing just what you said, paying public relations outfits to smear people. Look at the way they destroyed Dr. Andrew Wakefield. And all he did was trying to raise some concerns about children that had been vaccinated, a possible connection. And, I mean, they just went crazy and destroyed him. It's sad. And in fact, we're going to suffer. I mean, we think ourselves as a scientific society, but when you don't allow scientists to breathe, when you remove freedom from science, suddenly you're turning the clock back a few hundred years. You're going back to the time of Galileo and the Pope, where the Pope told Galileo to get on his knees and admit that he hadn't seen spots on the sun, that holy body. And Galileo had to obey, and for other things he was thrown into prison. But we should have gone way beyond that. Science is about controversy. Nothing is clear-cut in science. No debate, no issue is beyond scientific debate. Einstein said that the only law that he thought would never be overthrown was the second law of thermodynamics. Everything else he thought was up for grabs. But apparently in the United States, there are laws, apparently, which can't be overthrown. One of those is that fluoridation is safe and effective. And if you repeat it enough times, it becomes a holy writ. And fluoridation is promoted like a religion. I believe in fluoridation. This is nonsense. And so I think this practice, amongst other things, is as great a threat to the notion that public health policy should be supported by honest and accurate and objective science as anything else. It's, and in addition to that, something else which I think it will undermine us as a nation is that every time, every day this continues, it further erodes the public's trust in the very agencies that we need to protect our environment and to protect our health. And I'm not looking forward to the day when the majority of people do not trust what comes out of the mouths of the Center for Disease Control, the Food and Drug Administration, the National Institute of Health, the Department of Health and Human Services, the EPA. That's not going to be a good time for our society when masses of people don't trust all these scientists who've been employed to protect us at a huge expense, because what will then do is to steer people towards voodoo medicine and voodoo dentistry and voodoo everything else. We need to trust these people. We need to trust our doctors. We need to trust our dentists. But unfortunately, most dentists and doctors are so busy treating patients that they don't have time to read the literature. That's one of the reasons we wrote this book, The Case Against Fluoride, so we could put into one place as much of the scientific literature as we could, which pertain to the lack of benefit and the increasing evidence of harm, in one place with 80 pages of references for those who need to pursue it, because we realize these people don't have enough time to read the literature for themselves. And unfortunately, what they're doing is regurgitating either what they learned at dental school or medical school, which was only one side of the issue, or they are simply regurgitating pronouncements from professional bodies that have an invested interest in keeping this nonsense going because they're frightened of losing credibility at this stage.
Now, I just want to interject a comment that was made to me by a colleague who actually worked as someone that was very high up in the Department of Health. And what was said to me was that the fluoride is necessary in order to promote good oral hygiene and oral health for the masses, because there are many families that do not have access to dental care. So how true is that statement?
Well, it's absolutely true that the majority of dental decay in this country is concentrated largely in low-income families. That is true. But the problem is that the 80% of dentists do not treat children on Medicaid. So what we should be addressing, this problem of where the tooth decay is concentrated, with better education, better dental services, better diet in particular in the inner cities and what have you. That's where our money should be going, not only to fight tooth decay, incidentally, but also to fight obesity and diabetes and all the other consequences of obesity. That's where the money should be going. Education, better diet, and instead of putting poison in the drinking water. Many dentists would like to help poor children, but the return is so small from the federal monies available that they're losing so much money treating poor kids. But that's the real issue. But the fluoridation is such a red herring, because even the promoters of fluoridation, the Center of Disease Control, the Oral Health Division of the Center for Disease Control, it's about 30 people, dentally trained, who promote fluoridation. They're not qualified to talk about its safety, but they promote it. They admitted in 1999 that they had got the mechanism wrong of fluoride's benefit for over 50 years. They said, we used to believe that the fluoride had to get absorbed into the enamel before the teeth had erupted, so that when the teeth had erupted, they would be more resistant to acid attack from the acids produced when sugar is broken down by bacteria. But they said laboratory and epidemiological findings indicate that not enough fluoride is incorporated in the growing enamel to protect the teeth from tooth decay. And the predominant benefit of fluoride is topical. It works on the outside of the tooth, not from inside the body. And at that point, you can understand why it's not in mother's milk, because that doesn't make much sense, because mother's milk is something you drink, you absorb to get the nutrients. It doesn't make sense, because if you want the fluoride on your tooth surface, the best way to do it is to brush it on your teeth and spit it out, and your little is absorbed that way, rather than drinking it and A, exposing every tissue of the body to a known toxic substance, very toxic substance, and B, this way you don't force it on people that don't want it. And if somebody could still prove that there's some benefit to the baby or the infant from drinking fluoridated water, then do the sensible thing and make it available in pharmacies and supermarkets for people to buy or be given it free if they want it. But don't force it on people that don't want it, against their rights, their human rights to informed consent to medication. But they've admitted that it works topically, and that should have been the end of fluoridation right then. If it works topically, it doesn't make sense to swallow it.
Now, getting back to what you were saying about just the people that are pushing this and promoting it, how is it that you have people that you said they're not qualified to do so, but yet they are? How is that even possible?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you've got to remember that this issue is largely controlled by the dental lobby, spearheaded by the American Dental Association. Their expertise is on teeth. Their expertise are not on bones, brains, or the endocrine system, or any other tissue in the body. And if the discussion is about how it works on the teeth, or how it damages the teeth, there's a thing called dental fluorosis, and 41% of American children aged 12 to 15 now have this condition called dental fluorosis, which means they've been overexposed to fluoride. If you're talking about dental fluorosis and dental decay and the role of fluoride in this, fair enough. That's fair game for the dentist. Let's hear what they have to say about it. But the moment the issue switches to what harm fluoride may be doing to the bones, approximately 50% of the fluoride that you take in each day accumulates in the bones, more when you're a kid and more when you're get elderly, because your kidney function starts to break down. They have no qualifications to talk about that. Those medical issues, those risks, and in fact the and I've just lost my train of thought.
If they have no qualification, how is it that they're allowed to be in a position of power? That just doesn't make any sense.
Well, it also makes me wonder how
did they get there? Who's putting them there? And you know, why are they basically acting as puppet masters when they don't have the to be saying anything to people?
Well, unfortunately, I think the problem comes down to several things. First of all, most scientists, in my experience, are not interested in this issue. They think it's an old issue, it was resolved many years ago, and like me, they fell for the nonsense about the only people opposed to fluoridation and a bunch of nitwits, so they didn't have to bother. We have doctors and dentists who only learn one thing at dental school or medical school and don't have time to read the literature. And we have a media which doesn't have very much investigative journalism left anymore.
Because they're owned.
We've got masses of people who are, and there are so many problems out there that unless you've got investigative journalists, unless there's big newspapers and big TV programs raising this issue again and again and again, most people are largely oblivious to it happening. And if they fall easy victim to white coats, just like 23,000 dentists endorsed Viceroy cigarettes in the 1920s, and people believe that nonsense, every time someone in a white coat gets on a TV screen and says, this is good, this is great, this is wonderful, people believe them. And they also believe the American Dental Association. They believe the Center for Disease Control. And unless someone educates them to what's really happening here, and thank goodness for programs like yourself, where you are able to raise this issue, thank goodness, most people don't hear about this. We, for 15 years at the Fluoride Action Network, have been doing everything that we can to educate as many people as we possibly can. A, by my going out, talking on programs, going out, giving presentations at universities, to communities, wherever I'm invited, giving testimony before health bodies and so on, like I did for the National Research Council in 2003. And also we have this web page and our literature, our videotapes. And I would urge people to go to our webpage, which is fluoridealert.org, and find, if you can, the health database, where you'll see all the science pertaining to what I'm talking about, the fluoride's damage to different tissues. Which, but by the way, there's no argument that fluoride damages health. None at all. They can't argue that fluoride doesn't damage health, because millions of people in India and China, parts of Africa, parts of Mexico, parts of the Middle East, have been damaged by naturally occurring fluoride in the drinking water, where it's high. Endemic areas for fluorosis. Millions of people have had their bones wrecked, their IQ lowered, etc., etc., etc. So there's no argument about that. The only argument that they have is to try to argue that that only happens at high doses and fluoridation is at low doses. Unfortunately for them, that is not true, that these effects are being observed at fairly modest levels. For example, one Chinese study showed that a lowering of IQ, the threshold was 1.9 parts per million. And if you're fluoridating the water at 1 or 1.2 parts per million, there's absolutely no margin of safety there. There's no margin of safety there sufficient to protect every child. Remember, there's a huge range of sensitivity to a toxic substance. And also, there's no protection there for the range of exposure. It's not as if we were limiting every man, woman, and child to 1 liter of water at one part per million. You drink as much water as you want, and some people drink a huge amount of water. And so when you find harm at 1.9 parts per million, it's not enough to say, oh, well, that's a high dose, we don't have to worry about fluoridated water. Of course you have to worry about that. Of course you do, if you have any notion of toxicology at all. And these people don't. I mean, this comes back. This comes back to what we were saying before, that we have people that may be excellent dentists and may have done excellent dental research, but they apparently don't know the difference between concentration and dose, which is an absolutely sort of the first lesson in toxicology, a little bit of which I taught at university. The first lesson is getting students to understand the difference between concentration and dose. Concentration you can control. They can control how much fluoride they put into the drinking water at the public waterworks, okay? But you can't, that's milligrams per liter. But the dose that you get, milligrams per day, is determined by how many liters of water you drink. So somebody who drinks 1 liter of water at one part per million, that's 1 milligram per liter, will get 1 milligram per day. Someone who drinks 2 liters will get 2 milligrams per day. Someone who drinks 3 liters a day will get 3 milligrams a day, and so on. So to base your conclusions on studies done at modest or modest to high levels of fluoride is to miss the point. You have to examine the dose at which harm occurred and then apply a safety margin to allow for the sensitivity of the whole population. Now, and if you do that, fluoridation should get to be stopped tomorrow. Today.
Today, definitely. Dr. Connett, we have a couple of questions from Twitter and Facebook. Actually, one comment from Twitter, this is coming from Chris, and I don't know if Chris is male or female, but the comment is it true that this is the government's way of making the public medicated so that they can carry on other activities in which basically the public is being used as guinea pigs?
No, I don't believe that for one moment. I think the intentions of certainly your average dentist and doctor, there's no, I don't think there's any bad intentions here. I think they genuinely believe that fluoridation works. Their only crime, in my view, is they're just not studying. They're not responsible enough to study the literature, or admit they haven't studied the literature before they tell people that it's safe. And I don't think this is an attempt to dumb down the population, which some people articulate from time to time. It is a very peculiar way of doing it. Although I've talked about lowering of IQ, this would be a subtle effect, and I just don't see it. I don't see it as a policy at all. I think it has much more to do with this. I mean, I'm going to stick my neck out here and speculate.
I think
does the Center of Disease Control, why does the Department of Health and Human Service continue to promote fluoridation? This is the way I see it. If they lose fluoridation, they lose credibility. If they lose credibility, they lose the public's trust. If they lose the public's trust, then it threatens other public health policies. And some of those other public policies, in their eyes, are much, much, much more important than fluoridation. Like vaccination. I think they think that vaccination is far, far more important than fluoridation. But they have to keep protecting fluoridation so they don't lose the credibility hit, which would then impact their promotion of vaccination, possibly other public health policies as well. And then you run into a real human problem. Often we do bad things, but we rationalize them in the name of doing good things. So if they truly believe that vaccination is really critically important, then they will swallow a little bad thing of keeping fluoridation going in order to achieve the greater good, which in their mind would be protecting vaccination. So that's purely speculation, but it has puzzled me for 15 years to try to understand why these prestigious agencies and professional bodies continue to push this thing well beyond the due date as far as science is concerned.
Now we have a couple more comments coming from Twitter and Facebook. This comment is also from Twitter. This is from Konjo Hiker. She wrote, "No, I don't think they should. We already get fluoride in toothpaste. And, you know, once again, this is just, it's ridiculous that they're adding something that we don't need." And in regards to the previous comment from Chris, I just wanted to interject the fact that I think people are doing a great job of dumbing themselves down, so to speak, and they're so consumed with things that are distracting them, that are not life enriching, that are basically just. Honestly, it's kind of like living a life of just eating junk food all day, only it's yep. junk entertainment, junk education. It's not even education. It's just it's not a good utilization of your time. It's not quality time. It's doing nothing to enrich you, nothing to help you grow as a human being, nothing to help you contribute to other people and make an impact in some way on society before you leave this earth. And that is a huge problem.
I agree with you. I think that in terms of dumbing down the American population, I think the combination of television and the advertising on television has done a fantastic job of dumbing down the American people, really. Some of this reality TV, they call it, is just incredible in terms of dumbing down what we consider information, education, entertainment, call it what you are. So I think fluoridation compared to that is a minuscule impact on the brain compared to what we're doing with it, to our children's brains with this one-eyed monster in our living rooms.
Now, speaking of advertisements, Susanna wrote in on Twitter that every other commercial is for a pharmaceutical, and the commercials portray the user of that pharmaceutical as somebody who is happy, who is vibrant, who is enjoying life, but the reality is that towards the end of the commercial, all of the side effects are described. So
yes,
it's as if a visual, and I agree with you, Susanna, the visual shows something because you're focused on what you're seeing, and
yep.
you're not listening to the finer points, which, you know, this users may experience nausea, vomiting, what have you. I mean, anything that would, anything that has drastic side effects, don't take it. I don't understand why doctors even prescribe some of these drugs to begin with. If they have such heinous side effects, why go this route? If there's no other possibility, that's one thing. But in this day and age, I'm sorry, there's too much out there. Now,
but the relevance to fluoridation with that comment is that notice that they are required to do that. So these drug companies are required by law to tell people about the side effects, but there's a different law for government. The Center for Disease Control is not required to tell people about the side effects of fluoride. The doctors out there that are promoting fluoridation, the dentists out there promoting fluoridation, they just tell you it's safe and effective. They tell you that there are no side effects. So on the one hand, we have some kind of regulation of the pharmaceutical industry, but we don't have any regulation for government agencies and professional bodies that promote fluoridation requiring them to honestly disclose the health problems associated with fluoride. There's a double standard here.
Yeah, I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. But the bottom line is that they're doing it, they're getting away with it, and
yeah.
people need to know what's
yeah.
going on, and I think that's part of the problem. Now, I just want to make a couple of other comments, because we've had a lot of activity on Facebook about
yeah.
this. Gordy Okiki wrote, "We're all water people. Water is 75% of our body and planet Earth, my friends tell me." And Kim Lowe added, "No, let the people decide if they, you know, if they want to be, if they want this or not." Arya Yeager wrote, "Nope, no, 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 no." And then she wrote, "And hell no." So thank you, Arya. But a lot of irritated people that are fully aware of what's going on now, at least if they weren't beforehand. And another comment. Kimberly Woolwich Crawford wrote, "In Florida, I smell it, but double filter it, so don't drink it. Yuck, right?" And
No smell. Fluoride doesn't smell. She's probably smelling chlorine or maybe another contaminant.
But even the chlorine is that's kind of scary. I mean, you like to go swimming, but you don't want to drink your swimming pool.
That's right. Absolutely.
Now, let me ask you a question. I'm just dying to know, what has the response been from the EPA about this?
Absolutely outrageous. Outrageous. On January the 7th, the EPA, that is supposed to be, was told by the National Research Council panel in 2006 that the safe drinking water standard was not safe and needed to be lowered. They didn't do anything for 5 years, and they just started a risk assessment. And the first thing that they've said, announced in this public, after 5 years, they've said, "We are going to develop a safe drinking water standard which will protect children's teeth and protect them from other concerns." In other words, they are admitting that their agenda is to protect the water fluoridation program. We've got to protect children's dental health as well as protecting their other aspects of health. But they can't have it both ways. If you protect their health, you cannot come up with a safe drinking water standard which will make this so-called optimal dose for fluoridation. A safe drinking water standard, or goal, I should say the goal, which is a scientifically based goal for drinking water, would be much less than one part per million if they do the science honestly and they use the normal steps at risk assessment.
We are out of time, Dr. Connett. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's really been a great, great interview where just so much information has been given to our audience and can now reach even more people. Can you tell our audience a little bit about your organization and the website and how they can get involved?
Yes. Go to the Fluoride Action Network's website. It's fluoridealert.org. And there is an action place where you can see what you can do to help get it out of your drinking water supply. Get informed, get organized. Fluoridation is as easy to stop turning off the tap once we have the political will.
Thank you so much. And folks, please pick up a copy of The Case Against Fluoride, How Hazardous Waste Ended Up in Our Drinking Water and the Bad Science and Powerful Politics That Keep It There. And this has been June Sawyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Thank you for tuning in, folks. Have a great weekend.